Now, let's face it, everyone needs insurance. So, when you need to renew your cover, the on-the-grid hot tip is to give our mates at City Rural Insurance Brokers a call. City Rural have been dealing with the insurance industry for years, and they've got more than 50 years of industry experience. Need insurance for your business? They'll sort it. Are you a landlord and want to cover your rental properties or investments? They're your people. Or are you like me and need professional cover in case you say something silly on a podcast? City Rural can sort that too. They did it for me, and it was super easy. The best thing of all is that City Rural are, like you and I, motorsport people. If you've watched car racing this year, you might have even seen their logo on cars like the legendary Richard Mork Super Ute, among others. They know our game, and they know the people that follow it. So support the people who back our industry. And when you need to throw a new setup at your insurance cover, drop Andrew and his team at City Rural Insurance Brokers a line, and they'll fix you up. Head to cityrural.au or follow the links on theracetalk.com. City Rural, better cover, better service.
Delivering all the news, the informed views, and just telling great motorsport stories since 2003. Powered by theracetalk.com. This is On The Grid.
G'day everyone and welcome to another episode of On The Grid here on mypodcasthouse.com or on the Radio Show Limited's RS1. Thank you for joining us. Dave Reynolds to join us shortly, a previous winner of the Australian Grand Prix. We'll have a chat to him about motor racing, life in general. Dave Reynolds speaking just a tick. Also Mark Walker and Richard Crowell to join me to have a chat about what's been a massive week in motorsport, a big weekend down there in Tassie and other places around the world, and also a big week coming up right here for the Australian Grand Prix. All that to come right here on The Grid.
You're listening to the latest from around the motorsport world. On The Grid.
Well, it's been a busy few weeks for most supercar drivers, including this guy who had a double weekend up at Bathurst just only a couple of weeks ago, the 12-hour and then, of course, the Bathurst 500. Dave Reynolds joins us for a check. G'day, Dave. How are you?
Hey, good, thanks, Becky. How you going?
I'm excellent, thank you, mate. First of all, settling in nice at Team 18?
Yeah, mate, everything's going fantastic. I love it there. It's a very, very cool place to be. I walk in with a smile, I leave with a smile. Everyone's really cool, and yeah, it's just got really cool vibes at the minute. So yeah, I'm loving it.
Oh, fantastic, mate. And that's important, isn't it? I mean, it gives you confidence in yourself and also in the team that the right job will be done.
Oh, 100%. Like, you know, everyone wants to work in a good workplace. If you work in a bad workplace like we all have, it's a terrible feeling. You know, you hate going to work and it impacts your life because you spend so much time at your job. And when you get a good thing, you try and, you perform, you know. Yeah. It's a simple thing. Like, you know, a happy driver is a fast driver. And that's very, very on the point with me. If I'm happy, I'm fast.
Makes sense. Absolute sense. Hey, speaking of having a good time, double weekend at Bathurst. I mean, it's lovely to drive there once a year, but to get to drive there on consecutive weekends in an AMG Mercedes and then a supercar, fantastic stuff.
Yeah, it was really cool, mate. Like, I love doing the 12-hour. I've done it I've done it most years now. But this year it was a bit different for me because I was in a full pro car for an outright win. So, you know, normally I go there with a pro-am. Am's always friends of people years. And, you know, we go there, we try and win, have a good time, and I try and get the am up to speed as much as I can. And so, you know, our performance as a pro doesn't really matter. It's all about the amateur. Mm-hmm. But this year it was I was actually the third driver on the list. You know, I wasn't the most experienced in those cars, so they put me third in the pecking order. But I think I showed a bit of skill, and they actually moved me up the pecking order during the weekend. So I loved it. But it was I had a really good experience racing for the full factory, or not the full factory squad, but you know, the factory arm of the AMG customer team, Group M. I shared it with Mara Engel, which, you know, it's probably one of the best drivers in the world at GT cars, and Felipe Fraga, who's a Brazilian stock car guy. We got along famously. It was really cool. And I half changed his life a little bit. So I'm kind of happy about that.
No, beautiful. And the result wasn't too bad for you guys.
We qualified okay, and we were running sort of second on road, and we got like three or four penalties during the day. Everyone got a penalty, but we got a fair few of them. And then the diff broke and made it like really hard to drive. So we ended up eighth, but I don't think we were contending for an outright win. The Porsche of Matt Campbell was pretty fast. But, we were sort of second or third in the window for a podium. But, just a bit of mechanical drama.
And then you stay in Bathurst for a few days and get to jump in your supercar, a brand new supercar for you from a new team.
Yeah, exactly. So then I did the Bathurst 500 the next weekend. So I actually come home for 2 days, I think, Monday, Tuesday, and went back up there on Wednesday. And, started my supercar campaign with Team 18 and Tradie Beer. And, I loved it. Had such a good weekend. I wasn't really knowing what to expect because I've got a new engineer for the first time in 8 years. I'm working really closely with someone that is more or less brand new to. Even though I've known Richard Holloway for a long time, I've never really worked with him. I've worked with him at Phillip Island in 2008 when I shared a car with Paul Dumbrell, but I haven't really worked with him a lot. Well, I haven't really worked with him at all since. So. We're forming a new partnership, and I had a fantastic weekend. I exceeded my expectations of where the car performance would be or where the team's performance would be. So, we had a lot of things go not our way. So, with all the mistakes that we had, we still had pace, which, it's a fantastic sign for the rest of the year.
The other thing too is, I suppose, the fact that you've been slogging it out against Frosty for such a long period of time, and now all of a sudden you guys are teammates. Tell us through the makeup of that.
Yeah, so to be honest, he's the reason why I actually joined Team 18. Obviously, I joined Ford Performance Racing in 2012, and Winterbottom was like he was the star of the show of that team, and I've been in the same garage, or been teammates with him from 2012 to 2015. And in the last year, 2015 FGX year, he won the championship. I finished third, and we had a really good working relationship. So, we kept in touch when I left that team, when I went to Erebus in 2016. We kept in touch and stayed mates ever since. And, he gave me the heads up that an opportunity it came up to join that team, and he told me what it was like and where they're going and the vibe and everything. And I trusted him and I joined, and it's been everything that he said and plus more. So I've got him to thank. But we're slogging it out behind the scenes, trying to make our cars faster than everyone else so we can end up further up the grid.
Take us through the team that has two experienced guys like yourselves working together to get this team up and running to its full capacity. Most teams have, an experienced guy and then a younger guy coming through, but to have two guys who have been around for so long, for at least, 10, 15 years, does that make a big difference?
Yeah, well, I think he's almost 20 years in the sport. Yeah, I'm 15. So, our combined experience is a lot. It's way more than most other teams. So, when we sit down and talk about, the race ahead or the debrief or something like that, we've got a lot of experience to draw on, and, past experience of what worked, what didn't, what to expect, what not to expect, and things like that. So we've got a few young data engineers that we're trying to, help along. So, experience counts in this game. I don't think being younger makes you faster. I think, being experienced and know what to do makes you faster. Just the young kids, they fear a bit less. I think that's the only thing. But when you get a bit older, everyone thinks you get slower, but you actually don't. It's the will to win sort of diminishes a little bit over time. Other things become important to you, like family or business ventures or whatever else you got going in your life. But for me, I don't have much going on. I've got a good family I'm trying to raise, but majority of my time is spent at the workshop or just thinking about how I can win and be fast. So, once that disappears, that's when I think it's time to hang it up. But not for me anytime soon.
You've got a young girl who's about to turn one, I think, next month in April.
I do, so, yeah.
Yeah, so a dad of two children. Do you feel that that's
three,
is it?
Yeah, 11 months, 3 years, and 34 years old.
Ah, you had me worried there. I thought I'd miss one somewhere along the line. Has it changed you as a person? Has it changed you as a driver? Do you feel a little bit more responsible about things?
No, not really. It hasn't changed me as a driver at all. It just the only thing it changes is my time I spend off track, and if it's not on work, it's at home, and I don't have many other things outside of that, because family's very hard. It's a very hard thing to do. It's a very fun thing to do, very rewarding, but it consumes all your time outside of your job. So, that's me. I don't socialize a lot with my friends anymore, but hopefully that can come later when the kids start getting a bit older.
What do you like as a dad? Because really there's four kids in this family, isn't there?
sort of, yeah. To be honest, I never wanted kids. Never thought about it. Was never on my radar. It was always something I never thought of. I always thought like it was going to hurt my career or, take my focus off my career. Yeah. But as soon as my son was born, I was like, what? Why did I care? Like, why did I have those thoughts, stupid thoughts? And it's been nothing but the best thing of my life, having a little family. So, as soon as my son was born, I was like, far out. I wish I did it 10 years earlier. Those thoughts were just immature, stupid thoughts that I wish I never had.
Philip Island, what am I saying? Grand Prix this week at Albert Park.
Grand Prix, yeah.
You're driving with a bloke who I think's won about seven or eight races at Albert Park as a supercar driver.
Yeah, he's got the most race wins out of anyone. I think Russell Ingall has the next highest, like eight, or he's got seven, and Russell's got eight or something. So, yeah, he's the king of that place. And I know when I first turned up in 2012 and I drove one of the FPR cars back in the day, he was like miles faster than me, and I sort of worked out why. So I'm trying to be – every time I go to that track, I'm always thinking about what he would do there and stuff. So it's going to be interesting to share the car with him again.
Yeah.
Or share the team with him again. I mean, not the car. Yeah. But
no, I know what you're saying.
Yeah. He's very, very good there.
Yeah, he certainly is. There's no doubt about it. And does that help you in regards to how you may go about setting up your car? Do you think there'll be a similar sort of situation there?
Yes and no. At Bathurst, my car was probably better than his. His car was, maybe slightly better in the races, but, qualifying is absolutely everything this weekend. So if you don't qualify well, you're not going to race well. There's no pit stops. The races are short. They're sprint races. There's not enough tire deck to make up anything. So, unless you make a huge mistake, you're going to be plus or minus a couple of spots from where you start. So, qualifying is everything. So we're going to try and set our car up to qualify well. My car's very good at qualifying at Bathurst. So, hopefully we can trend our cars, both cars, towards that direction and see how we go.
Final one for you, mate, before we let you go. Unfortunately, we don't have Brody again this week. Another race that he'll miss. Do you have a bit of sympathy for what he's going through in his life?
Oh, absolutely. Like, it's shocking, and it's shameful to watch, the current champion sit on the sideline. It's just bizarre, but, I feel for him. It's a sticky situation. And I don't know what happened. But I hope he comes back in like next year or whatever it will be. Like, I hope he comes back and joins the sport, because he's what he did last year was very, very impressive. So he's gonna be missed.
Yeah, certainly will be. Mate, enjoy the weekend at the Grand Prix, and then it pretty much starts to get serious. I think you're racing sort of every two or three weeks after that through towards the end of the year. Yeah. So it'll start to really happen, which is great. Yeah, exactly. Good on you, buddy. Thanks for your time. Really appreciate it as always, Dave. We'll catch you at the track this weekend.
Thanks, Rebecca. You're a legend. See you, pal.
Good on you, Dave. Dave Reynolds joining us here on The Grid.
There's more great motorsport stories coming next on The Grid.
All right, welcome to the second part of the program. Richard Crayle, Mark Walker, g'day to you.
Shebex, big week in sport, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. Everything's happening in sport right around Australia. Mark, how are you?
Pumped up. It's big, isn't it? I mean, Max has already won, but outside of that, it's exciting.
Yeah, we'll talk about that shortly, but I agree with you. I did a little piece for a Perth radio station today, and they said, so who wins? And I said, it's more like who comes second and third. The winner's decided, surely.
No, see, I disagree. As journalists, we have an obligation to present all of the story. And while Max is definitely favourite, I think there are several factors pointing towards Ferrari being good. Max is definitely favourite, isn't it? But last year we had three red flags, so No one predicted that, did they? So it's the kind of event where everything goes on. The interesting thing about Melbourne and going through and crunching the numbers and doing some of the stats and the research and bits and pieces one does before one delves into such an event, the level of unpredictability at Albert Park since the reprofiling of the circuit has dramatically changed. And since the changes to the circuit in 2018, there were five on track passes after lap one. Five in the entire
for the whole
field.
Race.
That's not
for the whole
good,
race.
Yeah, for the whole race. Jeez. After lap one. Not a good stat, is
no.
it? That compares to the average of 29 for the season. In 2022, there were 27 and 30 last year. So while it's not a lot, it's still not even one on-track pass a lap. And, you know, we're talking about the back markers carving each other up. It's still a dramatic increase in unpredictability and competition that Albert Park has delivered since the circuit came back in 2022. So, you know, you throw that into the mix, you throw into the fact that even though Max is braining them in race pace in qualifying trim, this is about as close as F1's ever been in terms of the field spread in qualifying. I think there's hope. I really do. So it's going to be fun finding out. And when Max is celebrating and that Dutch national anthem plays and he's won 10 races in a row for the second time in his career, that is what is going to happen on Sunday, which is a remarkable statistic. I'm sure we'll have an interesting fight to have got to that point.
I have no doubt there'll be an interesting fight for the other two places on the podium, to the extent that we could even have, we have a genuine Aussie chance for a podium here with Piastri.
I generally think so. The McLaren's a decent mousetrap at the moment. It's not a bad car. You look at where they were at the start of last season relative to where they are now, it's an enormous leap forward in performance. So I think they are genuinely in with a much better shot at delivering a result. And you know, Lando's been fast and Oscar's P4 last time out, so you know, that's only one position off the podium, isn't it? And you get a crazy sort of race like we had last year, then anything could happen, which is cool.
And the cool thing there too is that it's the first time since 2013 we've had two Aussies on the grid of the Australian Grand Prix at Albert Park, which is a pretty nice stat. And I mean, who had it on the bingo card that it would be Daniel Ricciardo under the microscope and not Sergio Perez? I mean, Sergio's had 2 second places. He's done everything he's had to do so far. And Dan's the one who, I don't think Saudi Arabia was necessarily his fault. I mean, dropping it on the last lap probably was, but I think they had some deeper problems there with that car. So it'd be interesting to see how things shake out there on home soil. Dan's had some good runs here in Australia in the past, just missed out on the podium. So he'll be one to watch.
Well, finished second, didn't he? Got pinged post-race. So, yeah, and then he's had a fourth as well. So yeah, he's had some good runs there. There's no doubt. The Ricciardo under pressure storyline's a decent beat up, but I don't know how much fact there is after two races. You get four or five races into a season, you start being under pressure, but two races in, come on.
No, that's fair, cool. That's fair. Yeah, you're right. No. But there'll be other blokes who are under pressure for sure, wouldn't there? Especially if you're driving in a Ferrari, Lewis Hamilton's coming over next year.
I mean, Lewis is in a strange situation at Mercedes in that he's got you know, George Russell, who's one of the most vaunted young drivers in the sport, as a teammate, and that he's sort of a lame duck there, when by the time they get to July and start thinking about next year's car, they're going to cut him out of all the decision-making processes and all the secret squirrel stuff that goes in a Formula One team. And that's going to be fun. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how that plays out, and then what sort of pressure he's on in that second seat. And then obviously the other decision is who goes into that car next year and into the future. It's probably one of the better seats open in Formula One. So it's going to be a fun story, see where Lewis lies. But right now Lewis is gloves off, game on. He just wants to win another Grand Prix, because it's been a while between drinks for the 7-time world champion.
So is Carlos going to make a miraculous recovery? He would have had all the King's Horse and all the King's Men working on his guts to try and get it right for this weekend. Or are we going to see Behrman back for round 3?
Yeah, round good question. Well, no one's suggested anywhere I've read that.
Oh, no, this will come out 3 minutes after the podcast record.
Oh, of course. Well, this is true. So we should do two versions of this, shouldn't we? Now, I'm pretty confident Carlos will definitely be there. But, gee, looking forward to seeing Ollie Behrman run again, aren't we? That's what a superb debut he had in Saudi. Now, there's been no discussion of Carlos not being up and about for it. He's a fit young bloke, so he should be good to go, which is good, because the Ferraris have genuinely been good at Melbourne for the last couple of years. So I want to see how they go. Although Carlos did unceremoniously get dumped into a gravel trap at turn three, I should say, early in the race last year. So maybe he'll be looking for a better result.
It's definitely a big night in Lygon Street if a Ferrari gets up and wins the Australian Grand Prix.
Well, it was only 2022, remember, when Charles Leclerc basically brained the whole field all weekend. He was in dominant form that weekend. So, you know, it's still pretty recent.
And he nearly wrapped up the championship that weekend.
Well,
until the round afterwards, when Max got his act together and Red Bull didn't start burning down.
Yeah. Correct. Exactly right. Exactly right.
What are we looking forward to the most this weekend?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm looking forward to seeing Oscar in a good Formula One car. Last year's McLaren at that point of the season wasn't a good Formula One car, so I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to the fan reaction if he does something great. You know, we've all been there and we've heard that place go crazy before when an Aussie passes or there's a big moment or whatever. Mm. So I would love a moment where Oscar nails someone and passes them and gets himself into the points or gets himself into the top five, or imagine the noise that joint will make if he passes someone to get himself into the top three. That for mine is great, because that crowd's so engaged and passionate, and everyone bangs on about the Drive to Survive stuff, and yes, it's helped grow it and bring new people in, but you got to give those Melbourne fans credit. They know what they're watching when it happens. And last year, when all the dramas were going on at the end, everyone knew what was going on, and you know, they were chanting, you know, one more lap, one more lap, one more lap, when that safety car came out, when they ultimately didn't restart the race. So it's a very knowledgeable crowd, and I'd love to see them. I'm really looking forward to seeing them being engaged with an Aussie right in the thick of the action, which we haven't had for a couple of years.
And great crowd too.
Yeah, it's going to be huge. It's just absolutely sold out again, which is
Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
It's just going to place an emphasis on strategic plays, where you're going to walk, how you're going to manage your day and not get stuffed in a human jam.
It's like when you set off to drive to the airport and you know you've got to deal with like Westlink or the freeway around the city or the Bolte, and it's always jammed. You need to leave yourself an extra half an hour to get to the airport. It's the same kind of deal at Albert Park, isn't it? You're going to have to leave yourself an extra 15 minutes to walk wherever you need to get to go, because it's going to be so, so busy. It's awesome. It's amazing. And you know, they're going to break revenue records for the event, which is important because that helps keep the government, you know, churning out the $50-odd million a year they spend on it. But if they can see that there's revenue increases each year and the event's making more money, and it's, you know, the mythical tourism nights and tourism impact dollars and all that stuff that justifies these events occurring, as long as that continues to go in the right direction, then the government's going to keep paying for what is a spectacular event for Melbourne. The thing for mine, what will be interesting, Shebex, is there's a couple of AFL games on in a weird time slot in the afternoon up against it on Saturday and Sunday. And, I mean, it's the AFL's going to be they could be playing second fiddle in a big sporting town on Sunday for the first time in their lives, which would be interesting.
Yeah, well, that what is it, a 4:10 or a 4:20 game, Richmond-Port Adelaide on Sunday?
Yeah, and that's
slap, like bang right in the middle of the race.
Right in the middle of the race, and Port Adelaide's not a particularly big draw in Melbourne, are they? So, no. Yeah, interesting. Very interesting.
We'll see what happens there. Well, do we know what maximum crowd is?
130,000.
130. I thought it was 120. 130.
130, yep,
capped. It's a good number.
Yeah. I mean, they could spend more money and get more, but there's a point where it stops being enjoyable, doesn't it, for people going. So I think that in the space they've got, that seems like the right number. Like the Sunday last year was enormous and it felt enormous, but it didn't feel out of control enormous probably until the track invasion at the end, really.
No, very true. We do have, of course, another Aussie racing there as well in the F3s, young Mansell going around in the F3s. And it's a bit of a shame Jack Doohan sort of is the reserve driver now and not doing F2s again. Would have been nice to have someone there as well.
Yep, Jack will be there, though. He and Mick are going to do demos.
He's in the old Benetton, which will sound grouse, but probably not moving that fast. So that's a nice thing, really. You get to have a good look at it as it makes a very loud noise as it goes past your very expensive seat. So
correct. Doesn't need to go real fast in those V10s. That I know that car. That car lives in Adelaide now. Only just arrived in the country in time for the Adelaide Motorsport Festival last weekend. And the new owner's very... I mean, you'd be okay if they rock up and say, oh, can you let Jack Doohan drive your car? You'd probably go, hey, he's pretty good at race cars, you know.
He'll sure, that's right. What he's doing.
But I'm looking forward to seeing Mick on the bike. That's going to be fun.
What's he riding?
Isn't he riding a MotoGP bike or a Honda or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, fantastic.
Yeah.
See if he can put some more titanium in his, in his limbs.
Support categories for the weekend. Of course, we've got supercars, possibly for the final time. We've spoken about that before.
Yeah. I'll touch on more on this in the hots and knots later on. Yep. I'm really looking forward to seeing Formula 2. F2 is completely mad racing. It's bonkers. They're insane. They crash into each other a lot. There's a lot of safety cars. You know the saying we've got where you go full Super 2? It seems like it's the same, and F2 has an occasion of going full Formula 2, but it's always just brutally entertaining. So I'm really looking forward to F2. F3, of course, with young Christian Mansell, Tommy Smith in that field as well, which is good. So a couple of Aussies. It's cool. F2, though, stands out for me. Those cars are fast. Like they're as quick as F1 cars were 10 years ago. Like they probably lap Albert Park quicker than that Benetton we're talking about will. They're just insane racing. And the first rounds have been pretty entertaining stuff as well up in the Middle East. So looking forward to seeing F2 back and putting on another show. It'd be interesting to see if it lacks anything without the Aussie impact like it had last year with Jack Doohan, though he didn't have a particularly good weekend regardless. But either way, I think when they're 7 wide going into turn 1 on a restart, people will be paying attention regardless.
I'm kind of looking forward to the supercars, the first two races, 20 lappers, with the no pit stops on the soft tyre around Albert Park, a track that has a bit of degradation about it. There's a chance for some comers and goers there. Will they all just wobble around and take it easy and go slow at the start, or will someone have a bit of a crack? And it has potential to be good, but it has to play out. So I think that lack of pit stops might actually play into the hands there if it all works out right.
Or do you try and bank a set of tyres and try and get that win later on in the week?
But there's just no tyre stops in the races, Shebex, with no pit lanes. So that's the different factor this year around with the supercars pitted out the back of the paddock there with no punters in the garages, which is a bit weird.
Yeah, that's an early knot. Are they? Although I think we knotted that the other week, didn't we? But the the supercar races be interesting with the soft tyre. and how they approach it from, yeah, like you say, with the strategy, whether they do press on early or not. But the tyre races we've had there in the past have always been quite entertaining. So, and the Gen 3 cars were decent there last year, weren't they, when they weren't burning down? Yeah. So now they've solved that life issue. It'd be interesting to see how it plays out. It does feel very support category this year, though, doesn't it? Supercars. Mm. It does feel like they are fourth in the pecking order, which, I mean, they are. But yeah, it's it feels like a low key build up, despite the efforts of the supercar team who are doing things like sticking James Golding in a Pilatus to go and do aerobatics and things like that, which is all good stuff. But yeah, hard to compete when on the Monday of race meeting you've got people lining up at hotels trying to catch a glimpse of their favourite F1 driver, which is pretty insane.
Porsche, Peter Dixon, Carrera Cup, but racing as well, round one for them for the year. And there's been a few changes to the way that the weekend sets up, Richard.
Yep, round one of the championship, 27 cars entered. Good field, competitive usual mix of the pros, of which there are 18, and the pro-am guys, of which there are 9, and a very good mix within that pro group of the guys. Like, there's 6 drivers who have done more than 100 Carrera Cup races, and then there are 7 drivers on debut. So there's a huge sort of golf and experience in it, which I really like, which is going to be good fun to watch. Scotty Pye making his debut in Carrera Cup in a wild card entry for Porsche Centre Melbourne in BWT colours, which will be good fun. Changes to the race format structure for Carrera Cup. So one quali session of 30 minutes. Quickest lap sets the grid for race one. Second quickest lap for each driver sets the grid for race two. And then points set the grid for race three. So that changes things up. Porsche qualifying has always been a two-run scenario where you've got two sets of tyres, so they'll run once and then run again. So that will add a different layer of intrigue to that weekend, which will be quite good. No reverse grids or anything like that, but it means that if you have a bad race one, you can still pop back up the front for race two, depending on where you've qualified, and then your points for race three set things up. So... yeah, little changes like that will help the product, I think, Chebex. But another good competitive year of Carrera Cup racing coming up. It's a great championship, and there's no reason to expect why it won't be as feisty as last year's title battle between Jackson Walls and ultimate champion Callum Hedge was when we got to the Adelaide 500 at the end of the year.
And for the punters, if they want to catch the Carrera Cup cars, you're still in the middle of the track?
Same location. Paddock very much open for business as well. So if you've got a GA ticket, what is it called? A park pass, I think, isn't it, at Melbourne?
Yep.
You can go and see racing cars. Actually go and see them. Which won't be supercars, but Fabian Coulthard will be there. Scotty Pye will be there. A couple of supercar guys always pop into the Porsche lounge for coffee because ours is better. Every ticket holder can go and see Porsche Carrera Cup's paddock in the same location as always in the oval. Basically, you go through the tunnel beneath the start finish straight before turn one. Keep walking up. It's on your right-hand side. There's a massive Porsche pavilion there. Come and check out some Porsches.
Now, I know you were down in Tasmania last week. Give us a quick review on what happened down there at the Speed Series.
It was a big weekend of sports action, and I won't give too much away now because there's a bit to cover off in Hots and Knots, I think. But it was a terrific weekend, actually. Really good racing, interesting program. I'll burn a hot now because I do need to give a shout out to the Hyundai XLs because they were just sublime. Their racing was outstanding, and a 14-year-old kid who was the prize was. The prize of the weekend was a trophy shaped in Tasmania, in the shape of the island of Tasmania, right?
Yeah.
But which was referred to by my friend and colleague Christopher Stubbs as a map of Tassie trophy, which
nice.
I think for some of the teenagers in XLs, it didn't mean quite what they thought it might mean. I'll just leave it at that, but it was very funny. But they put on a great show, really good. TCR was dramatic. We'll come to that later on. Trans Am was exceptional. We'll come to that later on as well in the Hots and Knots because they're both worth talking about. But plenty of drama, and I thought it was a great weekend. Speed Series Chebex is going to be interesting from here on because it gets if it wasn't serious already, Phillip Island is a proper big boy race car meeting. So GT4 debuts, Michelin Sprint Challenge Porsche's there. They'll probably have 30 cars. And it's the opening round of GT World Challenge, as well as TCR, as well as Trans Am and Radicals. That's a proper big event, race car event. So it's going to be a really good thing that builds over the course of the year from this point onwards.
And what did you do last weekend, Mark?
I watched the NASCAR from Bristol Motor Speedway, Thunder Valley, and it was an absolute cracker with the Cup Series there. 54 lead changes, which was the all-time record for a NASCAR short track in 76 years of competition. Is that 3 years worth of overtaking in total from Albert Park?
Correct.
It is. What a lead at Bristol there. So basically what happened is that they reverted back to the old concrete track. The tyres were falling apart. They don't know why. They're the same tyres they used last year on the concrete track, but they were just falling apart, and all the drivers had to learn how to conserve their tyres. So subsequently, we end up being a few of the old hands there at the finish. Denny Hamlin, Martin Truex Jr., Brad Keselowski filled the top three, but it was genuinely really entertaining stuff because their cars just wobbling around everywhere. It was fantastic. Shane Van Gisbergen back on board this weekend. Coda at the road course there, Circuit of the Americas, double duty in the Xfinity Series and the Cup Series. And you can watch those Xfinity Series 7:30 Sunday morning and the Cup Race 6 a.m. Monday morning. So I think both of those are achievable for your viewing habits.
Please explain to me what happened to Scotty McLaughlin the weekend.
Nothing. He had a weekend.
Oh, was it the weekend before, was it?
Yeah, he finished third.
Yes. But it had an opportunity to win, did he?
Oh, no, he did a great job from ninth.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
I just saw a post or something where he was talking after the race and he said, sorry, boys, that was my fault or something.
No.
No?
No.
Okay. He did good.
He did good.
I was in Thailand, so. Had that much alcohol that I probably didn't even know what I was looking at.
Oh, drink responsibly, kids.
Oh, man. Yeah. That's another story.
We'll get to that.
Yeah, exactly. Remind me to tell you about the getting ripped off in Bangkok story.
I'm not sure if that's publishable.
No.
No.
All right, let's move on with thanks to the Race Talk, our hots and knots.
Right. Well, continuing on the NASCAR theme, I'm going to give a hot to NASCAR statisticians. Hot. Because NASCAR's got a stat for everything. They love a stat, and I also love a stat. But I'm going to give a hot to the Hendrick Motorsport statistics team because they worked out on the weekend that when Chase Elliott led lap 62 at Bristol Motor Speedway, it was the 80,000th lap led by Hendrick Racing in NASCAR Cup competition in their entire history.
80,000.
80,000 laps. NASCAR do a lot of laps.
They do.
What makes that statistic even more impressive, though, is that with 59,969 laps led in Cup Series competition, Petty Enterprises ranks second in this particular statistical category.
That's a 20,000 differential.
Well, it's 20,039 laps more.
Wow.
For Hendrick Motorsport. So congratulations to Hendrick for the milestone that everyone desires, which is 80,000 laps led. You got there first. Well done. I'm going to whack this at the top of my hots because I have been spruiking sports car racing this year for those of you that have been listening to the podcast all season long. And once again, it delivered. The Sebring 12-hour, one of the great iconic endurance races in American sports car racing, was a beauty. And a late pass from Louis Delatraz saw him and his Wayne Taylor Racing with Andretti Autosport Acura pass Sebastian Bourdais caddy to give himself, Colton Herter and Jordan Taylor the win in the race. Bourdais, Scotty Dixon and Renger van der Zander, one of the great names in motorsport commentary, second, 0.8 of a second the margin between the two of them. It got better though because Matt Campbell finished third in the Porsche that won the Rolex 24 at Daytona, which means he continues to lead the IMSA championship. And then despite the fact he's not doing the whole thing, but so that was a great result for Matty on the podium. He continues to be a pretty good guy at life when it comes to long distance racing this year. But what makes it even more betterer is that BMW finished fourth 12 seconds behind the winner, and so four brands in the top four. IMSA have got their balance of performance stuff right at the moment. They are doing a really good thing. As a side effect to that, it was very cool and very hot, in fact, to hear Lee Diffie calling Hunter McElroy in the LMP2 car for TDS Racing, making a very nice pass, which put that car in the lead of the class, which was freaking huge for a moment there. Unfortunately, they couldn't quite get there in the end, but Hunter finished second with TDS in LMP2, and a really impressive start to his professional racing career in sports car racing, which was very good. So hot IMSA sports car racing is on another planet at the moment. It's very, very good. Also,
that Hunter McElroy move was just an amazing move in the dark. It was, if you haven't seen it, folks, get on YouTube. I'm sure you can find it, but it was just fantastic.
He called it a full send, and it absolutely was, which matches his style, which is great. I love it. Massive hot, and the hot that Lee Diffie could get to call it too, I think is particularly special. Hot Simmons Plains Raceway, so hot that it was literally on fire.
Yep.
Oh.
On the weekend. That was an interesting experience. Five separate little bushfires broke out at various points on the weekend, but I would like to emphasize just how unbelievably good Simmons Plains is as a racetrack. You know, as a racetrack for racing. Not facility. It's okay as a facility, but as an actual car racing track where you want to see good car racing,
yeah.
Simmons Plains, massive tick. And I don't know what it was about the weekend, but I don't remember a weekend where the whole two line thing at the hairpin was as evident as it was on the weekend, where lots of people would go shallow and look like they were getting past the guy on the outside, but then they'd get better drive and end up in front. I don't know what it was. It just worked on the weekend. Big tick. Hot for Trans Am. It's a category that now I feel like has come of age this year, and it feels like it's actually got stakes. And with all the respect in the world to Nathan Hearn and James Moffat the last couple of years, it's now got enough depth and enough serious drivers behind the really good guys like Nathan and like James that one weekend you're going to win, the next weekend you're going to be seventh or eighth or worse. Trans Am has taken a big leap forward. It's box office stuff at the moment, and the racing on the weekend was very good, thoroughly enjoyable. I've said it before,
and I'll say it again. If Trans Am was our main racing car, other than supercars, if that fell aside and Trans Am took over, the punters would love it. There wouldn't be an issue. Get the same drivers in those cars.
Maybe. Yep.
Be a bit cheaper too.
Well, it'll be a lot cheaper. Anyway, that's a story for another day. Hot Trans Am. I would like to just give a little bit of a hot, a little self-indulgent hot to our TV team covering the Shannon Speed Series, because I thought the way that the controversy was managed around the TCR elements on Sunday afternoon was really well done, and in particular by Greg Rust, by Chris Stubbs, and Cam Vanderdungen, who worked the lane on that story. I thought it was balanced. I thought it was fairly presented. There was nothing cut from an editorial point of view by either ARG or by Motorsport Australia, which is great. So there was no influence from the higher ups. Good TV people were just let to make good TV, and I think that's important. And I thought it was actually really good. I thought that was great television. It was proud to be part of that. So well done to us, I suppose. Hot to the Australian Motorsport Festival, Adelaide Motorsport Festival, the AMF, looked incredible. What a thing. Massive crowd, really cool cars, lots of social buzz over the weekend. Did you know it was streamed live on the Sky Sports F1 YouTube channel?
No, wow.
Yeah, it was. David Croft was the guest of honour there. So that's a big thing, isn't it? When the government's tipping money in and you've got access to several million subscribers in the UK, that's genuine international publicity. So well done to our Lord and Saviour, Peter Malinauskas, for his continued support of motorsport in South Australia. But well done, AMF. Hard not that I wasn't able to be there on the weekend, but it looked terrific. Well done, everybody. Hot to Formula One buzz. I received a phone call on Monday afternoon from the guy who guest hosted this show last week in the form of Greg Rust, and he said, "You wouldn't believe it. At the hotel I'm staying at are where McLaren are staying, and there are already fans lining up outside in their papaya shirts waiting to grab a glimpse of Oscar Piastri and or Lando Norris. Monday of Formula One week. That is Taylor Swift.
Beatles stuff.
Yeah, so that's huge. That's very, very cool. I think that's great. Hot to the CEO of the Australian Grand Prix Corporation, Travis Auld, who said on SEN's Grid Talk program on Sunday night that they were not ruling out the track invasion returning in the future, which I think is a good thing. It was political hot potato last year. The event got sanctioned by the FIA for the track invasion. There were people on the circuit before the track was opened and allowed to do so, and as a result, it was blocked for this year. Everyone disappointed about that because it's such an iconic part of the Australian Grand Prix. I just hope that everyone plays ball this year. If people play ball this year and don't run onto the racetrack while there are still racing cars on the racetrack, and in fact don't run onto it at all because they've banned it altogether, I love the fact that the CEO has come out and said there's a chance it'll be back next year. That's great. My only caveat to that is that if Oscar Piastri wins the Australian Grand Prix this year, there is no fence tall enough that will stop people from running onto that racetrack one way or another.
And we're not encouraging that.
We're not encouraging it, even slightly. I just think that that's...
We're just realists.
It's where you got to be realistic about that. And that, I think, concludes the hots that I got this weekend.
Mark.
Oh, wait, 2-1. Hot.
Oh, hang on.
Hot, I get to call a Grand Prix again. So that's pretty
good. Good on you, mate.
Nice.
Good.
With Gunter.
No. We're hot to everyone getting rich. Look, I don't gamble, but I think I'm just about to change that. The other day when I looked it up, Max Verstappen was paying $1.20 on the nose. So that's just cash in the bank right there. You can just go and turn all your $1 coins into $1.20 coins. That's huge. however, if you're looking for a roughie, Sergio Perez, the second favorite at $9.
$9?
I'm no expert at maths, but I think everyone's rich here. I don't understand how you could, you can't lose.
Like, no. Just,
so punt. Get on the punt, people. Gamble. Australian Grand Prix merchandise. I've seen a bit of a preview of it, and it's actually a really tasty little collection they've put together. It's nice stuff. Sometimes the Grand Prix stuff looks a bit tacky, but I think they've got some good stuff going on there. Well done.
Still Australian expensive.
The Grand Prix merch itself isn't too bad. The stuff that's branded Albert Park, but
the team stuff is
a Ferrari hat. Yeah, and they buggered there. Valtteri Bottas at the Adelaide Motorsport Festival. What an absolute lad. And actually, further to your hot there, Richard, they live streamed it.
Yeah.
Did you know that? You could live stream historic spec motorsport. That's huge.
I know. Who would have thought? Amazing.
Good stuff, eh? Hot, it's the first time two Aussies on the grid. That's big. Hot, I haven't talked to the Race Talk upper management about this, but I think we should separately power rank the F1 and the Super V8s this weekend.
Yep.
Okay, cool.
Hot.
Further to your hot, Lee Diffie. It's seemingly he's been promoted to the A squad for NBC's NASCAR Cup Series commentary for their races after the Olympics.
Steamy
That's
hot.
Cool. All the NASCAR fans like our Lee Diffie, and we love him, so that's fantastic if that is indeed the case.
I wonder if they need another Aussie to come into IndyCar in the races he'll miss at the end of the year.
Does seem like there's an opportunity there, really, isn't it? I don't know Matt what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Oh, here we go. Here we go. Look, I don't know what I'm doing tomorrow, but IMSA have released their 2025 calendar on March 16th, 2024.
What? Yep. Impressive.
I had a bit of a moment there. Was it April 1st? Have I got a concussion? There were a lot of things that went through my head there, but it's a true level thing that's happening. They've got their shit together to a point that the rest of the planet can be completely envious of. So well done, IMSA. Hot goes to Blendline TV's coverage from the Winton State Championships up there. Brilliant stuff. A low light was when Brock Hamilton suffered an absolutely massive spud in his Formula V, but he walked away from his upturn canoe. So that turned into a hot.
Good.
Going out and cutting laps on a racetrack is hot. On Sunday, I toured out to Sandown International Raceway for the BMW Drivers Club of Melbourne Come and Try event to partake in some happy laps. And holy moly, that track surface they've got going on there really does put Western New South Wales in perspective. what a go track. But I'm happy to experience Sandown before they eventually turn into a block of flats. 5 stars also goes to the on-site security who let me in. Great stuff. Would recommend. Well done, Sandown.
Nice.
Good bloke.
finally, from me in the hot ranks, it was revealed in the NASCAR coverage from Bristol there on Monday morning, our time, new Stuart Haas driver Josh Berry, who's Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s protege, and IndyCar star Joseph Newgarden both went to school with Taylor Swift.
No, really?
Fun fact.
Nashvillians.
Fox Sports' Clint Boyer noted, and they let Travis Kelce get away with it. good chat.
Hot.
It's only going to be another month or two. They'll be finished shortly.
Nah, it's love.
It must be. Our knots, boys. Off you go.
What are your hots, Rex?
Well, no, my hot's just the Australian Grand Prix and the fact that we've sold out 3 days, 130,000 people each day. It's just going to be absolutely massive. The event still continues to hold interest here in Melbourne and continues to get even bigger and better. So my hot is just everything around the Australian Grand Prix for 2024 may continue to grow.
And Thailand.
And Thailand was hot. Golf courses in Thailand are amazing. I don't know if you've ever had the chance to see one, but no, they are so well done. We played a course called Red Mountain, and there's either the fairway or there's the jungle. There is no rough. If you go off the fairway, you don't play that ball. You play another one because the caddies that you get who drive you around the buggies are too scared to go in there because there's snakes. We saw a python that was probably in circumference maybe about that thick. I know that's no good for radio.
Good radio. Yeah.
and it was probably about 25 feet long.
Wow.
It was a big thing that went across the fairway. Yeah. And the other thing about Thailand, you definitely get to see a different Thailand when you're with your mates and not with your wife.
Yeah. Right. Richard,
your turn. Not for that last comment. I feel like supercars just really feel like a support act this weekend, don't they? It just does not feel like a big championship round for Australia's biggest racing category, but maybe that's just me. Not Carrera Cup. We've got two races at 6:25 PM, which makes for a fairly long day at the races. Unfortunate, but there you go. I'm going to not, this isn't a not, or a knock indeed on the Adelaide Motorsport Festival, but I would like to see a competitive element in that event. I think it lacks a competitive hook. It lacks something that can be on offer for a trophy at the end, which I think would just complete the whole package. The display stuff, the demonstration stuff, that's cool, but I still think it needs to evolve into more like Goodwood, where you've got the hill climb, where you've got that competitive element. Because I would love to see someone go, hey, Valtteri, do you want to do the top 10 shootout in the CG891 Leighton House and see how fast it can go? I think that would be spectacular. So I'd just like to see a competitive element at the AMF. I think that would be great. Otherwise, it's all hot. There has to be a knot to the varying events that went on around race three and TCR on Sunday at Simmons Plains. It was unfortunate. It was not what a category that really needs some stability in a year of just proving itself and back on free to air, which everyone's been clamoring for. It doesn't need the discontent that created. Having said that, if that kind of discontent promotes that kind of racing that we saw in race three, which I'd noticed, Mark, you and I both forgot to hot, but that was hot. Then I'm all for it. Bring on the discontent, because if they race like 1995 British Touring Car Championship every weekend, TCR is going to get a lot of eyeballs real quick. So it was just it left a sour taste in the mouth the way a lot of that played out, and they need to be very careful with how all that's managed from here on in, noting that there has now since been an appeal or an intent to lodge an appeal from World Racing about the removal of points from race one. So that will be discussed further, and we will see how that all plays out when we get to Phillip Island.
Rich, do you think Tony D'Alberto has regrets at all about sitting that one out?
Yeah, I think he might have regrets at the final round of the championship. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, potentially. I think he'll have more regrets if they win their appeal and he gets his points back for winning race one.
Yep.
So, Richard, the knot you just had, was that based around how the whole thing was
it's just a very,
handled by the drivers, or how that was handled by the officials in regards to taking
very,
the points off?
It's just a very broad knot to the whole scenario.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
That our sport needs to be better at being less confusing. Because it was. Yeah. It was confusing. We had no idea what was going on. Yeah. But from the points, from the restart, from the whole lot was confusing. And it's not a great look, I don't think, in my opinion. The people that incessantly complain that supercars should race more. Now, while we all agree on this program that supercars should race more, 12 rounds is not enough. I would just like to point out that in the 10 weeks between February the 11th and April the 21st, of which we are now right in the middle of that little stretch, there will have been what you'd call major events. Three speed series rounds, the Bathurst 6 hour, the Bathurst 12 hour, two supercars rounds, three if you include the Australian Grand Prix and the Adelaide Motorsport Festival, plus multiple rounds of Victorian State Championship and all the other bits and pieces going on, and plenty of two-world stuff if you like that kind of stuff. The best part about it is, sans the Phillip Island Classic, every single one of it has been streamed or broadcast somewhere. So there is pretty motorsport good. Around. If you know where to watch it, get off your backside. If you're complaining there's nothing on, and find places to watch it. I'm also sick of people going, defaulting in the Facebook comments, "Oh, I wish this was broadcast." And then what I do love is the first comment after that is like, "Mate, it was on Channel 7 or it was on Channel 10 or whatever." That's great. But do a bit of research, people. You need to look for it.
You don't have to look for it. You just go to the Race Talk TV guide.
Exactly. Correct. Hot for the Race Talk TV guide. Anyway, that's all I got.
Okay. Mark.
In a world of no social hate, I kick off my knots this week with a tale of online bullying and torture. And it all comes from Tony Shebekian's stories about how much he sweated last week in Southeast Asia. Truly disgusting stuff.
Mm-hmm. It's true, though.
Oh, it was stop.
Very humid.
Here's one to make you think. Volunteer officials this week at the Australian Grand Prix need to be trackside for nearly 50 hours over the course of the event. That's a lot. Big ask for all the officials, and there's a lot of them here this week. So good. Our thoughts are with all of those guys. Park this one under a watt. I popped onto the old Australian Grand Prix website to look at tickets this week, and it appears that there's still limited tickets for Thursday for around the grounds. And then Ticket Tech seem to be reselling some grandstand tickets on the second-hand market sort of thing, which are going for around twice the face value of the original price, so around $1,000 if you're lucky to find one that pops up from time to time. But it's okay. There are also a limited number of tickets that were available to the Marriott Bonvoy Lounge, which you can pick up for Sunday only at the low, low price of only $3,625 per person, which entitled you to a DJ, a TV, access to the roof of the pits, cloak services, a modern fit out and lounge style furniture, plus social and vibrant ambience. Oh, that'd be nice.
At what price? Ambience.
Oh, you need some ambience.
$3,600.
And you may also see Richard Crowe walking around because that's right next door to the TV compound.
Unlikely.
No. You also get the grazing menu, plus champagne, wine, beer, cider, soft drinks, espresso coffee, no spirits. For that kind of money, I was hoping for a roll cage Hyundai XL rolling chassis for your $3,625, but sadly no dice. Also, you're too late to get an entry into the $4,595 Red Bull Energy Station, which sold out, so sorry about that. Bad luck. Yay, supercars back on Channel 10, free-to-air this weekend. Woohoo! Except for the Thursday and Saturday races, which happen after hours and don't get broadcast on 10.
Correct.
Good one. Great. But Thursday evening, you can, in fact, watch the match that will determine once and for all who is the greatest nation on earth, Australia or Lebanon, with the soccer on 10 bold. That'll be great. Tune into that. There's more of a scheduling thing for supercars being on tacked onto the end of the day rather than a Channel 10 thing. Although Fox, a bit of a mild hot here, they'll be broadcasting across multiple channels this week with different content. So when they're doing like some F1 analysis while the Super V8s are racing into the night, they'll broadcast that on another channel. So there'll be just Formula One Albert Park content absolutely everywhere. You can check it all out on the TV listings up on the Race Talk right now. 80 odd listings for the weekend. So get that up here. It's a biggie. question: should media be getting autographs of famous race car drivers?
No,
There might be a reason for it, you'd hope, but the optics of it are pretty horrible if you get caught. The $1 million non-championship IndyCar race this weekend at the Thermal Club. I'll try and explain to you the format, but it doesn't make sense. So good luck with that. I'm going to nod it early.
Only pays $500,000.
Because, yeah, that's great. Yep. Not Pippo Durrani nearly sending it out of Sebring while leading on the weekend. That was a monumental stack, wasn't it? Big one there. Glad he walked away from that one. Did I see somewhere that cars have to be turned off during pit stops for the Bathurst 6 hour?
Potentially.
Good luck doing that with your turbo. That's this might be the year that the dirty old V8s come from the clouds Bradbury style and win the bloody thing. I'm guessing that the motive behind that is that there's been some sloppy pit stops there over the years, but from what I've seen at least, the sloppiness has emanated from the little four-bangers in the baby car classes that can't afford a turbo or competent refueling techniques. Anyway, thoughts and prayers to those involved. Great entry. I've seen that story circulating this week. 61 entries. Huge
good.
Week
it's
after good. The Grand Prix. Going to Bathurst. Do that. It'll be big. Finally for me, don't boo Max when he wins this weekend. That's just embarrassing for Australia. We're marginally better than that. Just.
Nice.
We've run out of time. I was going to do my hot on being tuk-tuk drivers in criminal tuk-tuk drivers in Thailand.
No.
But we've run out of time.
I don't think we have time for that. Or just, the legal defense either. So
no, just get ready for the comedy festival play that I'm going to put together. Very funny. Sam Pang is going to be the tuk-tuk driver.
Oh, my God. Okay.
He's a comedian.
We've been cancelled now.
He's a comedian.
Been a good show. That was on the grid.
Yes.
Thanks for joining us. We'll catch you next week after the Grand Prix.